Chat with Traders, episode 67.
The biggest secret of the best traders in the world is that they're just like everyone else. However, they've worked hard to learn the markets and discover what works and what doesn't. But how can you hear about these journeys and get in on the strategies and tactics they use? You can do it by listening to Chat with Traders. Here's your host, Aaron Fifield.
Our sponsor for this week's episode is Broker Notes. Broker Notes is a free online tool which has been used by thousands of traders to find a broker best suited to their trading style and the markets they trade. And you can do the exact same. Just go to brokernotes.co now, complete two simple steps, and you'll get the top 3 to 5 best matches all within just 30 seconds. It's a huge time saver, it's very easy to use, so go to brokernotes.co now to take advantage of this free online tool. How's it going, team? Welcome to episode 67. We have a very special guest on the podcast right now. His name is Jerry Parker, and you're probably already familiar with who he is. But for those who don't know, Jerry is one of the original, widely recognized turtle traders. The turtles were a small, somewhat secretive group of traders who were mentored and trained by Richard Dennis, a big-time commodities trader, and this all took place in the early 80s. It's a really interesting story, and you'll hear all about it in just a moment. Today, Jerry remains the founder of Chesapeake Capital, which is a commodity trading advisor, and he is well and truly stuck to his roots as a die-hard trend follower. We discuss all the above at length, plus I also had a few questions for Jerry around the subject of trading other people's money, which is something you may not have even considered before. And on the other side, some of the questions you should ask a CTA or any money manager before investing. All right, so we're going to jump to the interview right now. I'm your host, Aaron Fifield, and here is this week's guest who I was honored to speak with, Jerry Parker. Hey, Jerry, it's really great to be speaking with you. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
No trouble whatsoever. It's awesome to have you on. Now, I know you've done many interviews in the past, which I'm mindful of, so I'm going to have a shot at asking you some questions which may not come up quite as frequently, but nevertheless, I do have to ask you about the turtle story and how you got your foot in the door, because it's really an interesting story. So let's start right there. How did you become one of the turtle traders? And even though it's a very publicized and well-known story, for those who don't already know, what were the turtle traders?
So in 1983, a famous commodities trader in Chicago, Richard Dennis, ran an ad in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times saying that he wanted to hire a few people to come to Chicago and he would teach them how to trade using his methods. No experience necessary. You can probably Google the ad. It's out there somewhere, the same ad that I saw in 1983. And so that's how I found it. I was reading the Wall Street Journal, looking at the want ads. I was working in public accounting in Virginia, and I sent my resume in.
Okay. And can you give us a little background on who was Richard Dennis? I mean, obviously everyone knows his name as he was the guy who came up with the idea for the turtle traders. Tell us a little bit about his background in the industry.
Rich lived in Chicago and worked on the floor, I think initially, and then decided to go off floor and trade position trade. And so I think he did that for a number of years and made lots of money, supposedly. You know, that's the story, that he turned a few dollars into a few hundred million, and he was very successful. And he had two high school friends that they went into business together and worked together and traded together. And so he was one of the rare people who probably would say that he made more money trading his own account than trading for clients. Sort of rare, and prior, it sort of preceded the explosion in hedge funds and CTAs and things like that. But he's a very, very smart person and very nice person, and very fortunate that he wanted to teach a few people like me how to trade.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And why do you think it was that he did decide to do this? Why did he want to teach others how to trade and share what he knew?
Well, that's hard to say. I think that a lot of people think it's because he wanted to see if trading could be taught. That's the popular idea, but I think also he genuinely wanted to bring together a group of people and teach them his ideas and let them start trading, and then hopefully over time they in turn would come up with some ideas of their own that they then could sort of share with him and would make the whole trading process and better for everyone. So I think those two probably are close, but he probably wonders why the heck he did it at this point, but I'm sure glad he did.
Awesome. Okay. And I'm curious, where did the name Turtles come from? Like, what's the story behind the name?
So I got the job and I moved to Chicago and we had our training course. And then January 1984, we started trading with Rich's Money. It was 12 of us all in an office together. And inevitably, we thought highly of ourselves and we thought it would be a good idea to have a nickname. So we were trying to find some nicknames, and the 12 disciples or the 12 apostles or something like that. So that didn't stick, thankfully. And evidently Rich went on a trip to Singapore and they, or Asia, and they came across a turtle farm or a place where they were raising turtles. And someone said, "That's just like you. You're raising traders back in Chicago." And like all great nicknames, it was an accidental, and it came, and it just stuck. You know, who can predict nicknames? But it was a great nickname, and everybody sort of knows about it. I remember when in 1988, the program ended, and I sort of went out on my own, started trading. Then I went to New York, and I was trying to meet people in Wall Street and trying to find clients, and I called up this gentleman at a very large organization, and I said, "Can I speak to so-and-so?" And they said, "No, he's busy." And I said, "Well, can you tell him it's Jerry Parker and one of the turtles?" She said, "Okay, hold on." So she comes back, she starts laughing, and she goes, "Yeah, come on up." So on the payphone back in the old days. So it does come in handy, and everybody's intrigued by it. And lots of the meetings I go to today, 30 years later, you know, people want to know about Chesapeake and how we trade and how it's changed over the years. And then some people are really interested in turtle stories. How was it? What was it like? And it's a very unique situation. And I think the most unique thing about it was these were really genius people, who were amazingly smart, and had a system and a process that was incredibly good. So it was totally legit, and they were producing people who had some good ideas and good information about what worked in the markets.
Absolutely, and I mean, the name has definitely well and truly stuck, that's for sure. So you mentioned there that there was 12 people that they brought into this group. Did they ever introduce any new members over the 4 years that the Turtle Traders were around?
Yes, so the next year, the fall of 84, they did the process over again. So ads in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, send your resume in. I forgot if it was a 2 or 3 week course. And then so all of a sudden in January 1985, there was 8 more people. And so it was about a room of about 20 people. And the second group of turtles were our equals, were probably a little better. Really smart people, nice people. Some of them we still keep in touch with today. So we sort of knew at that point in time that this was a very, very special situation. We were very fortunate. We were learning a lot of stuff, and we were having good markets. And then probably the most important thing was not just getting the information and periodic lessons or you know, contact, but sort of the level of support and the level of encouragement. And it's unlike situations today where clients are not necessarily going to be supportive all the time, but with Rich and his partners, they were always encouraging and supportive as long as we were doing the right thing and not sort of focusing on performance. So it really was a beautiful, strong building block for going forward and being able to withstand the ups and downs of the markets and try to truly believe and absorb the fact that its success is probably going to be determined mostly on if you're able to continue to do the things that are right and sort of try not to focus too much on temporary bad performance or really good performance. Don't get drunk on good performance. That's pretty important.
I like that. I like that. That's a really great point that you raised there. Have you ever wondered what if you never got accepted into this trading group? Do you think you still would have pursued trading?
Probably. I remember the interview with Rich, and I said in the interview, I was very, you know, you're in these interviews, and you don't know what you're saying, and you're young, and in hindsight, I'm not as impressed by a lot of the things that I've said in the past, but I sort of said to him in this interview, like, well, whether you hire me or not, I'll be a trader. And so he was like, wow, okay, cool, you're hired.
So it worked.
So that kind of worked, but I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, I certainly wouldn't be the trader I am today. A lot of decent information is, you know, finally on the internet, I suppose, but whether I would have been able to sort through all the good and the bad. And it's hard to say. I definitely was going to exit the accounting profession and do something in investments. I love trend following. I had heard about and studied trend following shortly before the ad in the Wall Street Journal came out. So I thought trend following was wonderful, long, short. Diversification, currencies, commodities. Oh, God, this had to just be so amazing. I thought it was the best thing ever. So when I got to Chicago and figured out that that's exactly how they trade, I was, you know, ready. And I was I was already a believer in all of that. So I think, you know, diversification and going with the trend is very important. I guess the money management piece and how to size the trades and how to create a really diversified portfolio amongst the different sectors and each of the different markets would have been something that I might have gotten right or I might not have gotten right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. So once you were accepted, you know, to be one of the very first turtles that was introduced, what was the initiation process like? I imagine there would have been fairly intensive training for the first few weeks, seeing as most of you had very limited knowledge about markets at the time. And like you pointed out, that the ad actually specified you don't need any prior experience. So what was that? I think you mentioned it was a 2 to 3 week course that you went through right at the start. What were some of the big things that they tried to drive home during those first few weeks?
Trading is hard. It needs to be hard. It needs to be uncomfortable. Do the right thing. Do the hard thing. Trade small. Don't risk too much, which no one ever paid attention to, but that's what they said. Build systems that can last for a long time. Buy the highs and sell the lows. Buy rallies. Don't ever desire to buy a lower price. Typical trend following things and sort of this is going to be hard. This is not easy. It shouldn't be easy. And good systems, good trading methodologies have a low win rate. They're infrequently profitable. They have big profits and they give it all back. They have big profits and they give most of it back. It's the exact opposite way that you would want to trade, you know, and that's what works in the markets. I've never really understood fully to the degree to which people really believe when they say you should find a trading methodology that fits your personality, because I think I sort of was taught the opposite. And that is, to take money out of these markets, you'll be very fortunate, and to take it out in the way that you would like to take it out is impossible. And in fact, the opposite works, the opposite of what you would prefer. What I'd prefer, 1 or 2% a month, a pretty consistent return, and that's just not what we were taught or what we were taught that works in the markets.
That's really interesting, Jerry. That is really interesting. You know, during those first few weeks, I believe that they taught you their actual the system that they wanted you to trade. Like they gave you a from what I imagine was probably like an outline or a list of rules on how to trade this system. How black and white were those rules, and did they require any discretion from the individual traders?
They were pretty black and white, but we were encouraged to use our own kind of discretion or flair, but not to deviate too far. But like I said earlier, it was especially if you're going with the trend and you know, you had a lot of leeway and a little bit of as long as you were sticking with the philosophy, which is, you know, buy the highs, sell the lows, add to winners, never add to losers. So the exact specifics is there's no need to think that there's one way, one set of parameters that's going to work. So we're fairly hoping that we would use a little bit of this discretion more than we actually did, I believe. I think eventually what happened was is that all 20 people being in the same room, there was too much, I think people felt too much pressure to deviate. It's better to just be part of the crowd. We're all making money. And I think that if we would have been living in separate, working in separate offices, we would have probably more imagination, which is exactly what happened when in 1988, when we all went out on our own or left trading for rich. And people were forced to, you know, over time, to decide how they're going to handle things. You couldn't run to Rich and ask him, you know, and you had to sort of come up, think on your own more so than we did when we were there. That's my opinion. I'm sure other people would disagree with that, and but that's sort of my interpretation.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, in that case, were you profitable, like, straight out of the gate? I mean, you're in such a great environment to be learning how to trade. Were you profitable straight away, or did you also experience your fair share of challenges as a newer trader?
Well, so we were sort of told that if you lose 30%, you know, you're going to be in trouble. If you lose 50%, you're going to be in big trouble. You know what that means? So after a few months, everybody was down to about 30%, and some people were down 50%. And so their response was, you know, you guys are doing okay. You're doing what we told you to do. We've had some bad markets. So you're okay. You're fine. Keep going. And so that was a tremendous amount of encouragement. The bottom line was, were you following the rules? And pretend. It's a pretend situation, right? Because nobody would do that to you today. And in fact, one of the ideas was is if you make money and you're not following the rules, you are going to be in trouble. But if you lose money and you're following our rules, you'll probably be okay. And so that's the, you know, that does not exist in the real world because most people don't know anything about trading who give you their money. So you have to sort of deal with that fact. But, you know, that's the sort of encouragement and mentors we had. And of course, that was the lows. And by the summer, everybody was making money. And that was 1984. And I started slower than most people. But by 85, 86, 87, you know, we were all making about 200% a year.
Okay. Those are really impressive returns. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe there was a day when you lost approximately 60% of your capital in a single session. Can you share with us what went wrong on that day, and how did Richard Dennis react to this?
I don't remember him reacting. So we come in on, it was an incredibly profitable time. It was 1986 in February, March, and crude was on its way from 40 to 10. And it was probably a lot of other nice moves also. And we were up 200%. And so over the weekend, and then I was feeling very happy. And I think my bonus was like $1 million. I was very excited about that. And then Monday we had sort of a bad day, just a counter trend day after massive profits for a few months. And because we were so highly leveraged, you know, we had I had a 60% down day, if memory serves me correctly, you know. So I've repeated this story so many times. I hope it's sort of correct. But yeah, so I finished the day up 140, and I think I finished the year probably up 160 or 70. So, you know, it's a function of leverage. We were trading way too large for sort of a normal people, but this is what we were instructed to do, and we didn't know any different. This was the environment we were in, the people we worked for, and we loved it. But I don't think, since we didn't do anything wrong, and it was just like a bad counter trend day, like we've had recently in the markets with some of the rallies in the commodities and stock rally and things like this, these, you know, lower leverage, you know, you're losing a little bit. Higher leverage, you lose a whole lot more. But in the context of things, that was nothing we did wrong, because, you know, the definition of wrong is not following the system. So if you follow the systems, you don't do anything wrong. Now, it's kind of not always true, because you may sort of sit back and say, oh, my leverage is too high, or my system, I made some mistakes in my system. But by and large, that's sort of the benefit. And one of the problems with this style of trading is that sitting back and watching the systems do their thing and sort of being out of control, and only that's kind of a helpless situation, but then sometimes it really works well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's an interesting point you bring up, because you said that you know, there's a lot of time where you're just sitting back and you're letting the system do its thing. So what were you doing on like a day-to-day basis while you were there, you know, with the other turtle traders? I mean, were you ever encouraged to research and try to find strategies of your own?
That's a good question. So we only traded like 25 markets, and we didn't trade it overnight, Europe or Asia. And I don't think, when there was maybe one or two people who had a computer and had the capability to program it. I guess they wanted us to observe what we were seeing in the markets and give them ideas. I remember one person. Our trading systems were very short term, and now that sort of style doesn't work anymore. The turtle way of trading works great, but not those parameters. You can't be nearly that short term anymore, I don't believe. So, but some people launched off into being a little longer term, and I think that caught their attention. Like, what are these people doing? They're not getting out at the 40-day moving average. They're waiting until the 100-day moving average gets breached, and we need to have a talk with them. So I think some of that went on, although that's my memory.
Okay, sure. So after 4 years, the group split up and everyone kind of went their own way. Why did the group split up after 4 years? I mean, was this something that was really just an experiment and it was never meant to be a long-term thing? Or what happened there?
I don't know. I think it was planned on being a 5-year, but I think that it sort of, I think the turtles would have stayed forever. There was no CTA business. No one could foresee how large it was going to become, or the hedge fund business. And we were loyal to Rich, and we loved Rich, and we just wanted to please him. And it was a great environment, and then there was no way to know that we were going to raise hundreds of millions of dollars, and trading a few million with Rich was just fine. But I think that they probably got tired of it. I'm not really sure. I don't remember hearing the answer to that question, but it's kind of a hassle to, you know, put up with 20 people, and I don't know. I'm not sure.
Okay. Yeah. So in other interviews that I've listened to you speak, you'd mentioned that if this experiment was to be replicated today, it would probably be much different in the sense that it would be mostly a team of programmers trying to find systems to trade. But it made me wonder, like, how was the Turtle experiment any different from prop trading firms that operate today?
I could just have to guess, but I would say that it's Turtle trading is different from all kinds of trading in that it was very mathematical based and systematic based, and no discretion. Not like you have a little discretion on devising your systems, of course, and I like mine to be this parameter, you like yours to be kind of another parameter, but we're still going with the trends, we're taking small losses, we're not cutting our profits short, we're diversifying as much as possible, longs and shorts, and we're going to have probably about the same performance, risk-adjusted, leverage-adjusted. So that is rare, I think, on prop desk, in that if they are sort of 100% systematic and rule-based, they probably keep it a secret.
Okay, sure. So nowadays you run Chesapeake Capital. Did you start this immediately after your time with Richard Dennis, or was there a step in between there?
I started right after Richard Dennis in February 1988, and I immediately kind of had sense enough to know that I should have a target return a lot less than 200%. And we started strong, and we got involved in the grain markets of 1988. That was a nice year, and we did well. We traded our systems, and we probably made money like 7 or 8 years in a row. Never had a losing year for a while, so that was very nice. People were throwing money at us, whether they should or not, but people are greedy, and we were something sort of new, I guess. And having that four-year track record was very important. It's almost instant credibility. And even if people didn't realize who Richard Dennis was, they were willing to take a chance on young traders, as they still are today. I think some people have a preoccupation with something new and something, trying to find the next Paul Jones or something.
Yeah, I'm actually, I have a few questions that I'd like to ask you a little bit later, actually, around the money management aspect of it. So we'll definitely dig into that in a little bit. For now, I've got a few questions around your actual trend following approach. So, you know, someone like yourself who is a diehard trend follower, how would you say the trend following game has changed, you know, since the 80s when you started out to where we're at now? And how is it likely to change, you know, moving forward also?
Interesting. Well, I think, like I said, it was 25 markets, let's say, back in when I started. Now that we're we trade 120 futures markets, legitimately. They're full positions and not just token. I've heard some people say we trade 300 markets. We can't figure out. We call them up usually when we say that. We say, like, what 300 markets are you trading? Because we only can find 120. We trade 100 single stock futures. That's good. Liquidity is more, better. Diversification is better. I think the biggest change / only change we've really made over the years, it's material change, has been to trade longer term as the markets became choppier and more trend followers, more computers. You have to sort of have a longer term holding period, and that works well. It's always worked well. But it would be nicer to trade shorter term. But it's still a very profitable way to manage money. I think some of the unfortunate things that have happened, I think I'm not a fan of vol targeting, indiscriminately selling and buying by huge CTAs and money managers when the vol increases. It kind of feeds on itself and creates Dow down 1,000. I think a lot of people blame the CTAs for Dow down 1,000 and constant sort of volatility targeting without any sort of reasonable discretion of, you know, taking it easy to get those trades done. It seems like they're sort of just throwing a lot of more than a market can handle. That's unfortunate. A lot of these trends that you're seeing these days are in very violently. And so I would hope that people would stop, exercise more discretion.
Okay. So would you say that the overall returns from trend following have decreased due to increased volatility in markets?
No, I think they've decreased, number one, primarily because people trade smaller and they're trading for institutions. And we're in a zero interest rate environment where 12% is awesome. And you can raise a lot of money and clients don't like drawdowns. So a lot of large CTAs got onto that very quickly to have a target vol of 10 versus 20. And that helps a lot. I think that because we can fine-tune the volatility and the risk of the portfolio, we can always trade larger or smaller. And so targeting a certain return is sort of under our power, as long as markets are normal and behave, and not every year, but on average, we should be able to. Yeah, I think, like I said, you just have to trade longer term. And then over the years, it's been sort of most CTAs have tried to evolve away from trend following only in order to fully diversify with short-term trading, mean reversion, pattern recognition, the carry trade, et cetera, and in order to smooth out the returns of trend following and more make it easier to justify the incentive fee.
Okay. So as you've gravitated towards more of a longer-term time frame, what would you say is perhaps your average holding time for any given position?
Our average would be probably 1 year.
Okay. And I know some people listening, you mentioned earlier that, you know, a lot of really good systems have a low win rate. Could you give us a guide to your win rate? I mean, I think that would be really interesting for listeners to hear about and understand.
Well, I think our win rate is in the low 40s. I've heard other people talk about win rates in the 20s. I think that I don't like that idea because that just means probably they're taking smaller losses. And I try to take sort of an optimal loss, not too tight, not too close to the market, and not too far away. The size of your stop loss is going to be correlated to your win percentage. And then you're trading such a, you know, 40% is sort of low to begin with, so I'd like to not have a method that tries to preserve capital and doesn't have such a low win percentage that you're constantly losing money and eating into the client's capital. But I do think that, once again, it's sort of counterintuitive. Everybody knows you have to win 51% of the time and be very consistent. And so, once again, this is sort of counterintuitive that no, low win rates are better. Your average win will be about 2 to 3 times as large as your average loss. 5 to 10% of your trades will make all your money. And so this is very uncomfortable, very unfun following the system. What if my trailing stop gets hit? It doesn't move up quick enough. I'm going to give back all this profit. I've got to stop this. I've got to intercede and, i.e. not follow the system, in order to protect these profits, and then you're in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. So how do you decide when the parameters of your system may need adjusting?
Very good question. Well, I like to look at the trades, the large trades that have happened, and my job really is to participate in these trends that may last a year or two or three. But the longer my holding period, then possibly when the market turns around, the more money I'm going to give back. So I want to stay in and not keep getting chopped out and whipsawed in and out, because I need to participate in these trends. But then if I have my trailing stop too far away, I'm going to give back half my profit or a material amount of the profit that I built up over a year or two before I end up getting out of the trade. So I'm kind of paid to sort of navigate that and figure out to walk that line of long-term enough, but not too long-term. And I think that – so I sort of look at what does the computer say? What does it look like it takes to stay in these trends? What's the, sort of the shortest term I want to trade? And what's the longest term I want to trade? And so then I just trade a lot of stuff in between. So if maybe it's a 100-day moving average, and then the longest term I want to be is a 300-day moving average. So then I'll trade the 100, 150, 200, 250, 300. So I try to have multiple entries, systems that have multiple entries, multiple exits. And so any one trade is sort of going to be random as to what's the best parameter. But then if I trade lots of these systems, very similar, highly correlated, with different entries and exits, over time they're going to make about the same amount of money, but they'll have different performance, materially different performance possibly on an annual basis.
Okay, that's a great answer, Jerry. Thanks for going into that. Now, one thing we often hear as traders is that simple works best. I'm curious to know, how simple are your systems, or do they vary in complexity? Because I've always wondered, if we could see exactly how, you know, guys like yourself trade, would we be shocked at the simplicity of your systems?
Well, when you look at my performance sometimes, you probably wouldn't be too shocked, because it can be pretty bad. But I don't know if you'd be shocked. It's hard to say. I think that the most important part about trading is the sample size of your back test. It's nothing more important. No one ever asked me that question. No traders ever talk about it. I don't know. I guess they understand it. I guess they understand it. We certainly understood it. We certainly taught that from day one. And I think that sort of should be the root of simplicity of this idea, and that is that simple systems, an entry parameter, an exit parameter, and a stop loss parameter is going to give you an opportunity to have a large sample size. So the problem with more parameters, more variables, is the sample size gets smaller and smaller. And in this type of trading, especially in trading that's a non-normal distribution, you need to have an unusually large sample size. So that is sort of the behind-the-scenes reason that simple is powerful, because you can't get too fancy and eliminate trades and only take the good ones. Number one, that doesn't work. And number two is you don't have much of a sample size.
Yeah, that's very important. Yeah, like you mentioned there, that the sample size for sure. And just going further into the subject of robustness, what's your take on single market systems versus those that trade multiple markets?
Oh, if you mean, do you trade the same systems on all the markets?
Yeah, so do you have let's say you're trading oil, do you have a system that trades only oil, or do you have a system that might trade a basket of markets?
I have the same systems that they trade all the markets. So I trade this. I trade the markets, all, every market with the same systems. So the, and once again, you're back to the same issue of sample size. So if you trade all the markets with the same system, and you trade the longs and the shorts with the same system, then you can count all those trades and all those markets and the longs and the shorts together in order to come up with the sample size. So you've got to trade them. You've got to convince yourself that that's what you should do, and then you do it. And so essentially you are, your parameters are decided by what worked on the preponderance of the markets, of all the markets, on the average trade of all the markets. So you may be liquidating your short crude or going short crude at 90, and some of these parameters may be more heavily influenced and decided for you and for this trade by what happened in the currency markets, not crude. So it's really strange, and it really, I think, you know, I think it goes, once again, goes kind of against human nature. These markets have personalities. Certain things work better than others. You're sort of saying to me they're all the same. The expectation per trade is the same on every single one. But, you know, yen's really profitable and wheat's not profitable. So how could the expectation on wheat and the yen be the same? Well, it is. You know, it's, I'm looking at all these trades together, 5,000 trade sample size, long and shorts, all the markets. They all have the same expectation. The expectation is whatever the average trade is for all the trades. And you can kind of prove that to a large degree probably that trading, optimizing a market system for a certain market probably won't work if you sort of do an in-sample, out-of-sample. I doubt that what worked in corn in the 90s was the best system for corn in the 2000s. So I'm pretty sure you can prove that that sort of thing doesn't work.
Okay, and just to bounce another question off this topic, this you mentioned earlier that you trade also a lot of equities in addition to futures. Do you use the same systems that you trade futures markets as you do with equities?
I do.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, folks, time for a real quick break here and time to give a shout-out to BrokerNotes for sponsoring this episode. So here's the go. Getting set up with the right broker is pretty important. It can make a world of difference, and like I mentioned last week, there really is no one size fits all. And that's the reason why you should take full advantage of BrokerNotes' free online tool at brokernotes.co. When you arrive at the site, you'll be prompted to select which markets you trade, whether that's stocks, currencies, futures, etc., your level of experience, and any specific features you're looking for. BrokerNotes will then run your input through their database of hundreds of regulated brokers to find you the top 3 to 5 best matches. All results are 100% personalized for you, and the whole process will take you no more than 30 seconds from start to finish. Think of BrokerNotes as a really smart matchmaker for traders and brokers who will eliminate days of manual comparison. So whether you're curious to know if there may be a better alternative to your current broker or you're yet to open a brokerage account, visit brokernotes.co and try their free online tool now. Just do it while you're listening. Again, that's brokernotes.co. Now, you've also mentioned that you take a short positions. So from my understanding, many trend followers seem to steer clear of taking short positions. Why do you feel differently about this? And are you just as inclined to go short as you are long?
I am. I think shorts are great. Once again, you got a sample size issue. If you don't take the short, include the short trades into your sample of trades, they are historically maybe are not as good as the longs. The average trade is lower than a long trade. I think they add tremendous diversification. You can get a false reading on this, I believe, where if in stocks and bonds you have 20, 30-year bull markets, as we've had, none of the shorts worked in those markets. because there was no shorts. Anytime you went short, it was a losing trade because you just had massively sustainable uptrends. Oh, I guess 2008, you know, there are periodic decent downtrends. 2008, I take that back, maybe 2000. It's, you know, was sort of a decent. So sometimes you can get lulled into this idea that shorts don't work, but then really what's happened is you just haven't. It's too short of a time to declare that. You know, my son sent me an email about talking about commodity hedge funds and a lot of commodity hedge funds going out of business, and the AUM of commodity hedge funds is at this really big low. And I wrote back to him and I'm like, how could this be during one of the biggest commodity moves, commodity trends in a long, long time? And, you know, of course, the answer is because these guys didn't go short. They were long only. And so pulling out a sector from your portfolio, whether it's stocks only, commodities only, interest rates only, currencies only, this is very dangerous, you know, because the risk profile is going to go up dramatically if you're just trading one of those sectors. And then on top of that, to pull out the shorts and do no shorts, then anybody who's sort of seen how these numbers work and how the market's adding these sectors together, adding the shorts to your system, you know, creates this beautiful amount of diversification and way more risk control than you can get just by trading stocks only or anything only. It's tempting to take A-plus trades and only take the best ones, and then all of a sudden, I guess I was wrong. Some of these short trades can be good also.
Okay. No, that's really cool to get your take on that, Jerry. Thank you very much. Just moving on to a slightly different subject, have you found that advances in technology have allowed you to create better systems?
Well, we try to stick pretty close to the same strategy, long-term trend following, medium-term trend following, and to keep it straightforward, not too many variables and bells and whistles too. But definitely when we do our research projects, and we're in the midst of one now that's sort of complicated, it's nice to have that technology and the computers and the programs and smart people doing that for me. I can usually, just by looking at some long-term charts, sort of see what probably works in the markets, and it's nice to have that confirmed and specified by doing the research. And I think that I'm a big fan of good research and doing research and making sure you understand how your system's going to work, but also not falling in love with numbers and thinking that the future is going to look a lot like the past. I like to build into my systems some maybe ideas that will help me preserve profits or preserve capital that looks like maybe have been unnecessary in the past. So, you know, especially recently, we've tended to see things that we didn't really see in the past data. You know, now we've got zero interest rates and maybe negative interest rates, so need to think outside of the box a little bit and think above and beyond the past. That's very limited. We need 300 years worth of data, not 30 or 40, and we don't have 300, so we need to be extra careful.
Okay, great answer. Now, I said earlier that I'd like to pick back up on the money management aspect. So let's spend a little time on this. I know many traders might not have actually considered managing other people's money. Do you think it's something they should keep in the back of their mind?
Yes, I think it's a great business, managing other people's money. It's different. It's more rules, more regulations, more overhead, more compliance. It's a different game. It's not as easy as it was when I started, but trading your own money is good. Trading other people's money is good too. It's a sort of a better risk proposition that not all your money's on the line. So if you lose money, it's not all yours. So I think we do both. I trade a lot of my money and I trade clients' money. I think you need to set up a situation where you're not influenced by clients and you fire bad clients and you try to have a meeting of the minds and a good education process so people know what to expect and have them buy into your strategy and like the strategy and believe in it as much as you do. And the choice of leverage is important too.
Yeah, that's actually something I was going to bring up with you. So I imagine that is, you know, a big part of your day is actually managing investors' expectations. What are some of the ways that you do this?
Well, I think you need to let them just be able to describe how you're going to trade. I think we are very good at making sure clients understand what to expect. And we have a sort of an edge with trend and momentum trading is that, you know, things that are trending higher, we're going to be long. If they're trending lower, we're going to be short. And giving them a broad idea about how your risk budget is going to be set up and what they should expect as far as drawdowns and vol. And I definitely am frequently telling clients, you know, you should be able to look at your client statement and understand exactly why we're in the markets that we're in, whether we're long or short, because it shouldn't be too difficult to determine if what's going on, you know, the trend of some of these markets. So excelling diversification and risk control and lack of correlation and how managed futures can fit into a portfolio and trying not to focus too much on promising returns is another very good idea. The momentum factor is acknowledged by a lot of smart people and academia as something that is prevalent and hard to explain, you know, in a world of supposedly efficient markets.
Okay, so just further on the subject, as you've taken on more capital over time, has this introduced any challenges to the way that you trade?
I think the most important thing about raising capital, in my opinion, is to make sure that you can maintain the level of diversification that you think is optimal. So for me, it would just be, can I still pretty much have my risk budget in commodities still be 25% and equal 1/4 of my portfolio? I want to be commodities. And with the liquidity in the commodity markets or the position limits in commodity markets, that is something that can be challenging if you start raising too much money, because commodities are a great addition to portfolios, especially if you're trend following, especially if you participate on the short side as well as the long side. And you don't, it's sort of unique to CTAs to some degree to actively manage commodities and make it sort of 25 to 50% of your portfolio. That's one of the things that CTAs bring to the table.
Okay, so approaching this subject from the other angle, if an individual was to place money with a CTA or a money manager of some sort, what are some of the important questions they should be asking before they even invest?
Oh, we're probably talking about every single one of them. Sample size. Do you trade all the markets the same way? Do you trade longs and shorts the same way? Do you take shorts? When do you not take shorts? I think the most important question for, well, I guess we haven't touched on this, but I was thinking the other day that nobody ever asked me, like in the midst of losing money, they'll say, oh, when are you going to like cut back on your stock indices? When are you going to cut back on the dollar? And I'm really concerned. I'm sort of concerned with performance. And I think this is so misplaced because we're not concerned with performance. We're concerned with following the system. So I've never like had people come up to me and say, I know you're having a bad period. I know you're losing money, but I want you to promise me one thing. You're going to always follow this system and never deviate. That's a client I want to meet because that is the most important thing in the world. Are you going to maintain your discipline? Hey, I'm losing all this money. It sounds like you have more faith in these systems than I might. And, that's just so counter to what it's all about. I'm fearful of losing money. Cheat if you have to. Don't follow your systems if you think we're going to suffer more drawdowns and losses. So Okay, it's important to come up with good systems, good entries, good exits, diversification and money management. But equally as important, if not more so, to even if you have a poor system, you're going to be way ahead if you just follow it and you're disciplined and you never give in, you never give up, you don't abandon at the wrong time. And because you will, it's okay to make some changes and subtle improvements, but not if you're succumbing to fear and wanting to get out of the trades and get out of the markets. And so, yeah, following these systems, very, very important. They'll eventually turn around. I know, because there's been many times in the early years where I didn't follow the systems, and I'd be much wealthier if I had done that.
Okay. Okay, yeah, and to continue on that path, you know, you've been trading, you've been in the game for well over 30 years now, and you're preaching that you must follow your system, you've got to follow your strategy and stick to your rules. You know, are you ever affected by making emotional or rational decisions still to this day, or do you now just essentially trade like a robot?
I definitely think it's a huge edge if you can trade like a robot. It's a huge edge. I think that setting the appropriate amount of leverage that you're going to, you know, initially when you first start trading or you start the year or whatever, that's very important. And so if you trade too large and you're too volatile and you can't stick with it, then it's going to be messy to clean that up, and you'll eventually try to override your system. So it's sort of better just to sort of say, look, okay, I made a mistake, or maybe I'm trading too large. I'm just going to, this one time, I'm going to cut it down and get it to a place where I want it to be. But then let's just start being a robot again and following this system. So you maybe want to have one group of guys and gals who are doing the research and devising the models and the systems, and then another group that creates the trades for the traders to do each day, and then the traders, a third group, actually does the trades. So no one really has the ability to not do the trades that you're supposed to do. But we're all emotionally influenced, and we all have fundamental opinions and cocktail party talk and politics and economics, and we know it's going to happen. But you just don't want those normal human emotions to impact the trading. Like, you may not feel good, you may feel depressed, and you may know what's coming in the markets, but just don't let it affect the trades. Just be mechanical, be robotic. It's okay to make changes, then make the change calm, sober, then plan on being robotic for a long period of time.
I like it. Well said, Jerry. Now, my very last question, just to get inside your mind a little bit more, did you ever anticipate, you know, walking into those doors back in 1984, you know, when you first started out as a turtle trader, that you'd reach the levels of success that you have today?
Well, I thought possibly, like, intellectually, you know, that I definitely was learning from the very smart people. I didn't realize they'd be so smart in so many different ways, and so nice, and so kind, and such good people, and encouraging, and such great mentors. But I really did believe, and I still do today, that we had the best training possible. But there's no way I could predict that the markets would grow, and that we would have a successful business, and that we'd be in business a long time, and we'd raise a lot of money. So that business part, I think, you can't really expect. But I definitely am not surprised that how we trade and what we trade, how we trade it and what we learned in 1983 still exists. And I've never felt the need to be jealous of anybody else's decision-making processes. Better businessman? Yes. Better traders? I kind of doubt it. In my opinion, but it's sort of an objective thing, too. I'm sure somebody who listens to this podcast is going to blow up my inbox on all the managers who are much better than all the turtles.
No, you've done an awesome job, Jerry. It's been so great to have you on. Where can listeners go to find out more about you?
ChesapeakeCapital.com.
Okay, and your Twitter handle?
RJ Parker Jr. 09.
Okay. Awesome.
Big on Twitter. Yes.
Great. All right. Well, I'll be sure to include all those links at chatwithtraders.com, of course. Now, Jerry, it was such a huge honor to have you on the podcast. So I do want to say a big thank you, and I really do appreciate you taking the time to do this. So thanks again.
You're very welcome. I've enjoyed it. Thank you for putting time and energy into these questions. Enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
You've come to the end of this episode of Chat with Traders, but don't worry, more great episodes are on the way. To stay updated with each great new episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, and we'd love it if you leave us a rating and review. We'll see you next time on Chat with Traders.